Okay. I'm not going to accept people who had okay, is there any more for the minute that they show the section of permission? Sir, Commander.
I look for the assumption of the minute. Second.
Any second?
Yes, Chair, I will second the minutes of the 5th November 2014.
Okay. Any matter that I can say, Joan? Page 2? Page 3? I think that there is one issue that we have tried to check with the matter of that, but I would say it falls on 4 and 5. Honor of members, those who sometimes tell me that we keep some documentation on the day of the funding later. We try for our culture that there is work for the house. The example that I've seen of him was the ENCA about those workers from Aurora that they learned to do a 15 and they demand their money. Fortunately, I did this in the past of my advice. But I then thought was that there are aspects of the land, but there is something that I started mentioning from that. But among the issues that we have talked about, that when those were not to not get what they were supposed to be, I said, in part of the response, there was something that I think that was that even the interfere, they were from the front and the but the remainder were people. So the issue was trying to check for the other guy or not to get the other information. Well, generally, I would say for myself, I assume that the problem is not part of that. The first is an independent entity. That has nothing to do with that. We have tried to reflect on all the issues in there and matter that affects the government. I'm sure we also hope that they're trying to on the issue of the government. Because every 6 months, the Nearfield that the committee means to the committee and do not make mention of that. The inversion that you give us that the committee only tries, they must include all the public data apps to give the business, but also acknowledge the top language, the complexity of this matter. The general partnership could be created at the committee were making the first also to that issue, which could benefit from the problem. So we are trying to pay so that matter problem, please, rather than can make up with it. But I'm just saying, unfortunately, that issue, to the best of my knowledge, that is not the first time I have had those on page 5, page 6, on page 6 of the letter of the state demonstrator, we are still working on the, you remember there were three issues. The first issue is not the legal opinion, which I think we may only pursue the next week. The second one is on the need that whether legal opinion comes back to give that inviting and we invite the state administrator to account to the committee. Because we needed to approach the response to the state administrator. That is one that we have to write to the minister or to the ministry about our concerns on the failure of the state administrator to comply with the statute. And I say though that all those things will be subject when they need an opinion in that process. So we keep the members of that whatever the problem that is. Is there any other matter? Okay. Maybe not the first. No, yeah, first. Big one. Big two. Big three. Big four. Big five.
Thank you, Chair. I would second the minutes of the 12th November 2014 that said through the sessions of what the committee has discussed. Thank you.
Okay. And as I write in this one, it's two. Wrong, but No, the question that we get the problem, that's why the contract is here. The only thing was the question whether or not the member is responding so that we can then take it back, put it in here, and then reflect it from the because if you look at it here, it's more on the part in members ask the same question. The only part that reflects the situation is the people. In fact, we have certain facts to correct that that part before even if it's before announcement is also reflect more as a well, this is the fact as for the announcement, but you then have it as much as that correspondence of people later, but the decision of people who had the announcement, you know, you only have an announcement instead of the decision of the committee on what state the announcement has. But I think that's one part of the reflect. In second of the announcement as a resolution that could be going to announce what then was here. The way the reflection is just reflection is part of the announcement that we made. I think that is the but can we deal with this one? I'll leave with you. Can I have another?
Mr. Chairman, you make a proposal as to what your part would look like.
No, I'm saying probably that resolution is supposed to be under before you vote for the announcement. Then the last resolution I'm saying is my understanding is coming to a place of that rather than to reveal the presentation, tell you that you need to have a forum and remember the improvisation I said. Forget about the name what is a forum that can deal more specifically on the issue that relates to illegal, related, organized crime, so that we can have a conversion strategy on how can we resolve the process, rather than in the way that we are dealing with the terms of communication. That's how I understand the resolution. But I think that resolution was before number 4. Then I'm saying for number 4, we can remain with number 4 as an announcement. But after the second paragraph, where it says he circulated the response form. Then somewhere where it says, then this must have a resolution. So that letter that was circulated, it must have resolved. Now if it's referred only under announcement, it just becomes a paragraph under announcement. But if even if you remain with 4, we then say the resolution, it must reflect in whole. Here is the resolution that the committee took after that rule announcement. Although I can't recall whether we made it after or before the announcement, I'm trying to, but I'm saying it's immediate and we can work on that technical issues. But the issue with regard to state demonstrates has to reflect the resolution, not as an announcement that we can make. Both matters. What are the proceedings?
My turn to compare with you, but I think it should be not even an announcement, we should go send a road like before the announcement.
And that's easy because it's a fact that they can go back. I will work with the fact that as we look at the weather, we started with the announcement or we started with the continuation of the letter. Can you be able to say we put it? But if it comes as 3 days here after the announcement, we will then work a good effective wherever you locate it, it must be. Is that agree? Okay, we will do those both resolutions there. Eh? Okay. Now, when I remember, can we Can we go on the overtime program for the Northwest? I'm sure you do have in front of you. We have tried our level best to do. Unfortunately, we cannot secure the we will help us secure the meeting with the Premier of that way. And then you will look at it. What we have done, I don't want to dress you all on a member of the program. We have time to leave please for Friday open because we finish the buildings probably so that we can start early to see you. So I give you credit for traffic. Out of the, I don't know to say, out of the content that we received from that center, we took them on that center. But we thought it would be good to give them more time. Go, maybe, left. If you are like this, please give them your program to go so that they can see that we did the same thing. I know that was my message. Is that okay with us, remember?
Been applied for the overnight visit to the Northwest and Carlton.
Can you say that? We have a potential on that. So we are
My name is Yaman Sutta. And that's why in this game,
you can't have it one way. You can't say we only want inflows, but you don't you want to not allow outflows. Then basically nobody brings in their flows of capital if they feel that the capital can't be taken out. So I think that's an important perspective to know. And what we might want to do unto others, they can do unto us and our companies operate overseas. And you know, some of the big ones, aside from banks, I should say, are you know, some of our telecommunication companies that have an influence in many parts of this country. So generally enterprises, they tend to move supplies, they move capital, they move loans between countries. And while generally when these are trade related, or business related, such rules are clearly beneficial. But obviously there's great scope for abuse, and especially when it's not done for business reasons, but done to shift profits to exploit different sectors. I should also make this point, the financial crisis is not a mining issue specifically. It is across the board with almost, well, by definition, any company that operates multinationally. And in today's globalized world, even if you operate in one country, you're going to have some footprint, some sourcing, or even have sales to other countries. So there's always going to be global relationships, and the particular type of pricing for M&E is across the board. It's a financial sector, it's a retail, and so it's not a mining specific issue. It's a pure tax issue in a sense. And I should add that therefore that given in today's country and the focus on mining, I think that what we should know, understand that companies generally all operate with, many companies operate, if you look at across the JSE, top posture, etc., the multinational character, will tend to have some special vehicles in Guernsey, all these islands that you have, okay. Cayman Island, you know, Isle of Man, there's no Isle of Woman, but you know, there's all of these that you have all over, okay? You also have some that are very close to us that are part of the EU as well, that aren't very nice, and really we need to sort out some of those opportunities that they allow people to exploit. Now, up to 2008, you know, really, whilst countries were formally all committed to dealing with tax havens, in fact, many of the G7, some of the G7 countries could themselves be inclined as a tax haven. You have very, some of them were themselves a tax haven. And in fact, many didn't care about small open economies like ours. But after 2008, when countries had to bail out their banks, taxpayers were forced to fork out large amounts of money. Suddenly revenue mattered in Germany, it mattered in the US, and suddenly there was a paradigm shift, not just against light touch regulation in the financial sector, but to begin to act on tech havens. Okay. And actually a list of G20 leaders met, this has become a big issue. And that is fantastic news for us, okay? Because it meant that for the first time, emerging countries could actually, we always felt these problems, but we couldn't act. We could only act in a limited way, that we could act much more boldly now. And this was, of course, driven by the fact that revenue was needed in these countries, running large deficits. And of course, you know, the only time when divorce or split or fight are good is when it comes to tax affairs, because you can hide it. But once you have some sort of divorce, suddenly people start talking about what these companies are doing or what this person has done. Not that dealing with tax issues, but that's basically lots of information comes out. So you've seen this from countries like Luxembourg and so on, suddenly being leaked by companies showing that the residents of countries who are hiding their money in those countries. Okay. So it's been really good that these things have been taken up. So it's a major work, particularly the OECD, and the council tell us about your base erosion project, transfer pricing. And in fact, it does mean that we can actually look forward to, in the future, to tightening up on these areas of use. Because the key issue is really the tax information shift. And bear in mind that it's a tenet of the tax laws all over that tax methods are confidential, especially when it comes to customers, because I guess there are trade secrets involved, but also people don't want others to know about their tax affairs. I'm not sure if it needs to be as opaque as it is, but that's something that is an absolute principle of any tax administration system. Just contrary to the transparency of tax, and I'll come to that point. And that's why even today, we feel frustrated, because we cannot pass out, and thus it would be illegal for our colleagues here to say to us, these are the issues with this company or that company. I know that these things, they make the news. Nothing stops Parliament from calling these companies up and asking them and see whether they want to answer. But that certainly can't give you any such information. The only thing we can all hope and pray for is that SARS is ahead of the curve and is actually watching them very, very carefully and actively. Of course, this has been in the news when you look at whether it's Amazon, Google, Starbucks. They've all been in the news. The financial institutions, I think it was Morgan Stanley a few years ago in the UK, they've all been in the news. And many of them operate in jurisdictions where clearly they aren't producing. And it does look, if you just follow the EU recently, they've actually been looking at agreements struck in countries like Ireland, Luxembourg, almost guaranteeing low taxes and avoidance of taxes. That these efforts are successful in being stamped out is something that we cheer and say, well, we'll have to say when it happens. So, but you know, there's complexities, because these are not just groups that you have customs officials checking and dealing with those sorts of issues, but how do you deal with services? How do you deal with electronic services? Okay, this is a big area. We just started looking at VAT, electronic services. It's something that does have great difficulty and challenges, not just in South Africa, all over the world. I just want to link other issues. You know, depending on tax practices, you see, aside from business reasons, but it does play a role in mergers, acquisitions, where companies domicile. And this is something, before 2008, people would think these are exchange controls, limiting companies, but today, the very investors come from funds. There's been an Elstrom deal. The UK has some peculiarities about its tax regime, where capital from outside is repatriated from the company, they get taxed. It's a pretty high tax system, US. And so you would have heard about what they call tax inversions, where countries swallow up other companies swallow up other companies in order to change their tax system. Where it was the team, the five of the professors, and these are all news, countries, and they're big news. And suddenly governments are popping up and threatening companies when they do these deals and so on. So these are big issues. So I guess the key point I want to make is that you need globally coordinated action to get effective tax oversight. You need a sharing of information between countries, different tax authorities. Bearing in mind that this information tends to be confidential, okay? And that's why some countries use specific information. Yet, when there's transparency, I think that much more can be done. For example, whilst your tax affairs may be confidential when you're not doing anything, when you're just dealing with normal tax practices, that's one thing. But the question that could come up here is, when you have a tax deduction, should that be as confidential as with the normal tax that's on your profit base, for example. But there's also initiatives from industry. So if you look at the EITI, what is the Extractive Industries Tax? Yeah, it's a whole initiative which I think South Africa should consider signing up to, where companies voluntarily ask countries the info. But what stops
and this is in the mining sector, it's punish what you pay, and what now? But it meant to say a company needs to say all the payments made to a company were published. The pressure, of course, then is on the government to also publish and to see the money, so you know that it's not going into secret accounts. Okay. And this is an initiative that, again, the industry would want. It's something that I think it's good that we've got done. So the EI
apologize on the opportunity committee, but you have to get used to it. If you look at the average level of a member and how to get 10 years to your committee, so I've got people who have been here since 1945, and I'm being hands up on you for everybody. So just say, I don't know what they say. I've been up on it. I've had some trouble with it. The HOD, which are still in opposition, the HOD, we are cool about this. And I love them, by the way, so it shouldn't be. I think we should have some humor in committee meeting. Life is not as over serious as you think. It's a big, weighty issue, I accept, but we also see the lifestyle of life. So the same committee and finance is what it is, and it's not going to change. So your choice is either you have a to us, or you can leave.
Chair, just to end on this point, I think we also need to differentiate between some tax issues or some pricing and all sorts of other illegal flows that you have which are not tax related. Whether they be of money laundering, whether they may be whatever. And, you know, we always say we have lots of parliamentary questions, you know, how much money has been illegally taken out. And, of course, at the point of the people who do things illegally don't come and announce that. So it's not like you can have figures on those things, okay? But transfer pricing is a different issue. The output, I guess, within the system, but SARS police will know the details. Okay, I'll just very quickly just got some perspective there on the tech issues themselves. Just to give you an idea for members of especially the Mineral Resources Committee, the tech revenue has percentage of your budget. Okay. If you look at our system, your biggest amount compared to what the revenue side of the budget is from individuals, which is almost 35%. Next is VAT, which is about 27%, 26.8%. Companies is the most valuable factor. Okay. It's very cyclical. If you look at in 2008, when you had the global financial crisis and the recession in 2009, you can see how it went down to as little as 19.8% because it operated today. The other taxes are small. The fuel levy is just 5%. Excise, customs are all small. But the key point to note is your big three taxes, personal income tax, companies tax, and VAT, sort of clocks in just over 81% of our total national tax revenue. And that's most of the taxes in the country. You can also look at these in terms of GDP. The budget is roughly a third of GDP. We see the figures are therefore 9%, 6%, etc. And your tax to GDP sits at about 26%. Okay. This is just to show you the part, and as I said, if you look at your corporate tax, that's the one that's very volatile. You see that personal income tax and so on tends to be more stable or less volatile. As in terms of total GDP, we went as high as 27.6% just before the financial crisis and recession in South Africa, 27.6. It fell quite dramatically, just over 24%, but it's now begun to pick up the last few years. It's quite important to see that with tech issues, there's all this competitive issue. So if you look at transfer pricing, people exploit different tax rates. theoretical sense, in terms of total revenue, actually at the low end, yes, the Swedish may be distorted by social security checks, which you need to take into account. This is what you have in Denmark, Sweden, and so on. But you can see very poor. The green bar indicates that countries. With regard to the percentage of GDP, two collector is in Africa is relatively high. Our other neighboring countries, if you look at Nigeria, is very low. Now, what we do here is also give you information by sector, and I think this is important. If you look at as a share in terms of 2005 prices, mining is 5% of GDP, 5.6%. Much smaller than manufacturing, than, for example, finance sector. I know these are very broad testing, but it gives you a sense. We're not a big mining country if you look at it from a GDP perspective. And if you look at the growth, especially from 2000, you'll see that mining and quarry has actually not grown. It's actually almost where it was in 2000. Yet if you look at a sector like construction, where it was 100 in 2000, it's 231. So mining has really been very stagnant, if not declining. So if you look at since our tax system that we said that if you look at corporate, what are they taxed on? Is it corporate income tax? How is what we call a worldwide residence based tax? On corporates we generally only tax on the value generated in South Africa. Was the expert company. We do have lots of deductions. We also have capital gains tax, and we've got various incentives. The big challenge is how you differentiate the incentives. It's one of the big challenges in any tax system, and we'll come to that in the last presentation. I won't go into this sort of detail of the reasons and so on that you have behind the taxes. The new one. Any more graphs that, you know, again, I won't go through, but with regard to corporate income tax, you see where we are, the percentage of GDP across OECD countries. Move on. And in fact, the pressure on corporate income tax has been down. So I think the interesting thing to note here is let's look at mining. While it generates only 5% of the economy, 5.6, if you look at that line, mining and quarry, it used to generate 18% of CIT revenue. Okay, of CIT revenue was 80% of our total revenue. Mining is a percentage of CIT. And you can see that as a share of company income tax, how it's fallen, it's still slightly above its GDP percentage, but it's fallen quite significantly over time. Because either because other sectors have grown, or perhaps mining, as we've shown, has not grown as much with GDP being rather stagnant. So, when it comes to mining, as such, if you want to focus on mining, sometimes I think the financial sector is more interesting to look at, or their taxation. But mining companies are taxed at a normal corporate income tax rate of 8%, except for gold, because historically we have a gold formula that operates. Hope you don't ask me any questions. I'm sure between the funds and the interactors, they'll be able to answer those hard questions. It's also subject to ring fencing, so that you can't shift between mining. But they also get deduction, okay? As I said, not just the depreciation allowance, but they get post-mining rehabilitation itself, And of course, related to resources, there's a specific regime for oil and gas companies. We have, of course, the minerals. When we introduced the royalty tax in 2010, that more than a factor for income tax. Now, this issue is, you know, within the mining sector, when you have a commodity pool, like with oil as well, everybody wants to share the pain. But there are times where things become, the cycle moves the other way. You've seen commodity prices falling, and suddenly the profits that were there just fall, and companies start closing down and so on. So there's been commodity boom. At the moment, we're not going through a commodity boom. But we've asked the Daily Tax Committee, if you look at their terms of action, one of their big areas of investigation is the taxation of mining. They've had hearings, and they expect it to come out in the report. I think we've always made the point that our tax policy is not head on. We don't just today say tomorrow is a tax. When we start amending the tax system, it needs some considered work, it needs a proper research, and in this case, just given how politicized in terms of the mining industry has become worldwide, not just in South Africa, the issue of getting an objective committee like that under Judge Davis, I think, is something that we are looking for. Do you want me to get at the formula that we'll come to? You don't have to deal with all of this, but we just give you a slide. I think the big issue, and I'm also not going to deal with this because I know it sounds like a deal with it, but just that we have to cross border, so you can keep these because you've got them in your presentation. Just move aside so we can end. Yeah, okay. So I think all the OECD initiatives, in fact, Smart Contact has been working on this, serves on some of the commitments with our, the real expert that we have in South Africa. I don't want to think his praise is too high, but, he is, I think, really at the front edge of these initiatives, so rather than he explains these in more detail. Over to you.
But let's just have this case. have something where we know the market price of, let's say, a particular machine is 50 million rand, 50 rand, whatever. And what you discover is that when a company sold this machine to its fellow company, it had sold the machine for 50 rand, 50 million rand. Well, that's interesting. If this costs for 20, that means it's only going to be paying tax on the 10 rand, the 10 million rand. So, a lot less than what it would have paid. And in that example, you see there's quite a significant loss to South Africa. That's not where the deal stops. Sometimes what companies will also do is upgrade particular fees that they charge. So in this case, perhaps there was 5% marketing fee. Well, is that justifiable fee? You have to think about that and go and look at it. So maybe there's a world because there's some technology supposed to be in this machine, and which would like to be used. Well, is that a reasonable work fee charge? Typical question. So these are things that we also need to look at in the customer pricing space. Because that could be either legitimate or that could be a fiction. In which case we have to do something about that. I've not really spoken about this. The transfer pricing is located in a much broader set of issues globally. And we're just giving you a little bit more detail. It's still public knowledge. But you'll see that there are a lot of companies out there that when you look at them not paying a lot of tax, then you start thinking, well, why not? And there's been some work around the world to justify this. So the Hackathon one is an interesting one in this case, because here what happened was instead of transacting with the US parents, getting the supplier breaking into it, suppliers would use it via another facility, which then tracks the products. And again, why would you do that? Well, because it has a similar location as your fashion. So, the company made quite a bit of money there, if you can see what you're calling. Someone needs to go through a bonus check in that structure. So, what happened is, the OECD, and this is an initiative that is driven by the G20, came up with something called base erosion profit shift and action plan, which I believe has been circulated. And what the idea here is to try and get, look at the gaps in the international system, the mismatches, the spaces that have been created where taxpayers are taking advantage of, and to try and expose gaps. And it's important that this is a G20 OECD initiative. That means the G20 and this is a South Africa are part of this project on an equal footing. We are part of the deal, we working there, and our work class. And the focus that you see here is transfer pricing, and there are other issues, transparency. So an important point is, sometimes if you're sitting in South Africa and we've got a multinational enterprise coming into South Africa, you don't know what's happening in the rest of the world. You know what's happening here, but the rest of the world, you're not so sure. And that's useful information so that you can put the context together. So that's why one of the issues was country by country reporting so the tax administrations could see how the enemy was working around the world. And were there pockets of high profits and low tax? And then other bases where there were low profits and low tax, but lots of activities. So you can start seeing that is consistent. It's a story that you're being told about the fact that what you're doing in South Africa is low value added, that doesn't make much difference. But what's happening in an island somewhere is in fact very important, critical, and it's doing lots and lots of profit. This was what start giving the roadmap to where some of these issues are. And then you have other things which will be familiar to colleagues and members of the standing committee around hybrids, where you have instruments that are equity on one side of the transaction but debts on the other, excessive interest deductions, control foreign companies, and how the treaties are used in the space as well. So there are 15 action items in the big action plan. And to give you an idea of the significance of transfer pricing, four of them directly relate to transfer pricing. And another five have an impact on transfer pricing. So transfer pricing is very important. I won't spend a lot of time on this, but just to give you a sense of what the 15 items are. If there's one asterisk, it means it may impact on transfer pricing. If two asterisks, it means it definitely does. So one is the tax challenge of the digital economy. What do we do about the fact that a lot of what is happening today is digital? The outcome here is that it's actually, you shouldn't try to deal with it as something separate, as something that is part of the system, you can actually deal with the system. Then there's the question of hybrid mismatch arrangements, where you're taking a deduction on one side of the tax system, but on the other side somehow from taxes. Design and control foreign corporation rules. Interest deduction on financial payments. Now, from multiple tax practices, this is where countries sort of compete for tax. And sometimes they compete in ways that are harmful. So the idea behind action price is to try and build some norms and to provide for exchange of information. Treaty abuse. This is where people try and use the treaty system to get out of tax. So instead of avoiding double taxation and only being taxed once, they try and get to a situation where they are taxed not at all. So double non-taxation. So in the international world, something you try to avoid is double taxation, you try to get single taxation. But then that's what treaties aim to do. What some people are trying to do, and quite successfully, is they use treaties to get to a situation where they pay tax in either country. So double non-taxation. And our idea here is to try and prevent some of that. Artificial avoidance of permanent establishment, quite technical. Right, action aid, digital transfer pricing. This is all about intangibles to make sure that the way you price intangibles is properly done and that it's associated with the value and action created. You don't have a situation where someone develops a valuable intangible in one country, but some other royalty strikes some other country. And here's another one dealing with excessive capital for transfer of risk. You need to match those to where things are actually happening. You shouldn't be trying to grab horses so that profits are ending up where very little is happening, but somehow where there's a lot of things happening, not much profit. Action 10, high-risk transactions, we get some financial services stuff here, then things like management. 11, more statistical, can we analyze how these things impact us? 12, energy disclosure rules, so getting the tax authority know when you're about to engage in some of this aggressive tax paying, and exchanging information between tax administrations, because the large tax advisory firms have global databases of how they put particular structures and schemes together, which is great for them. Because as soon as something happens in a country, they can go to their database and say, well, can we use any of the structures that really exist? Yes, we can, and they can plug it and use it. Tax administration is on the back of the ship, because we don't have that kind of flow. Well, we're building that. We are building a mechanism to enable us to share information about the kind of structures that we see, but when one of these is affected, the rest of us can look at it and say, ah, we have something similar that we're aware of that closes down. Transfer pricing documentation, and very important, this is something I've touched on, the country-by-country reporting. The dispute resolution, as part of the flip side of this coin, if we're more effective about this, the potential for two countries to find tax the same income does increase, so we need to have a dispute resolution mechanism more effective, so that is part of the plan. And then finally, quite a few of these actions would require us to change our treaties. And changing a treaty is quite an laborious process. So either before you pass, you can develop a multilateral instrument that people can buy enough to that change all the effective treaties once, without it to continually renegotiate each individual treaty. Right, so where are we at this point? You'll have seen from those slides that there's a staggered set of dates or outcomes from the initiatives. And so there are a number of them that have a September 2014, some are September 2015, and others are December 2014. So we passed December 2014, and some of those outcomes are available. They've been presented to the G20 Finance Ministers, and two of those outcomes relate directly to transfer pricing. The one relates to intangibles, the action item edge. We've started moving there. There's more work to be done, but we've got the first stage in place. And second is country by country reporting. So the tech that has been designed, what information needs to be made available, we're currently discussing the actual practicalities of how countries are going to give them that information. So we have good progress in that space. Interestingly enough, I'll just have a slide for the fear. Okay, cool. So then we have on page 6, just to finish off there, you'll have seen that even the G20 did flag the issue that relates to developing countries, because it's well and good that the G20 is doing these things, and then South Africa, India, others have a voice there. But there are other countries that need to be involved, so toolkit to assist developing countries and pilot projects to help with this next exchange. Right, so let's just sort of pause and kind of stop there and see where the South Africa sits with respect to BEPS. And, well, at least we've made some progress. If you look at the digital economy, we are probably one of the leading countries here when it comes to taxing electronic services that are really from outside the country into the country for consumers. So we built on the kind of experience in the EU there, and we started to move, you'll see, starting in 2013, we finalized the community. Hybrid instruments, where you try and have this mismatch. Again, we started to move in 2012. There's more work to be done. The OECD work is far more comprehensive, but we've at least started to move on this space. Control for companies, we've had enough suspension for our relationship. We've had changes over the years, but we have at least the foundation for them. Interest limitations, again, something we've moved on recently from the principle of 3 proposals in this year's book on how to limit excessive interest limitations. Contract pricing, I'll deal with in a little bit more detail, but we started today monthly on that. And we have a mandatory disclosure system that has been put in by the 2000s. Again, these will all serve as useful platforms that parties have whatever the OECD is developing and build on. Let's concentrate then on so we introduced what is known as Section 31 of the Act back in 1995, and we revised it in 2014 to change it quite significantly, and we began to use it this year. So essentially, what does Section 31 say? It says that when one part of a group contracts with another part, it's got to contract at the price that would have been charged if they did anything. That's the benchmark. So if they've done anything other than that, we need to worry about. And why do we think that is the benchmark? Well, that is the international benchmark. That is the benchmark that is in our treaties, and that's the benchmark that is in the OEC guidelines on pricing. What we also do, which is something that a minority of countries do, is we say, if you go back to the example earlier that I gave you, we had that 20 rand of profit that wasn't taxed properly in time. We said, okay, we'll want the extra 5 rand to be income tax. What we then also say is, the hammer segment, if you don't charge enough for that good, which you didn't, you cross-click into the 50, that means there's 20 rand of profit sitting in the pool that shouldn't be there. There's actually been a flow of funds, or there's been a lack of flow of funds. It means money is not where it's supposed to be. And so we trigger what is known as a secondary adjustment, and we say that is a deemed dividend. And we then want our dividend withholding tax on that as well. Interesting enough, as I say, a minority of countries do this, because it does introduce some complexity. But we felt it was important to do it properly and go the whole way. There have been some precedent legislation, but that is the current situation. From a SARS perspective, we've created a dedicated transfer pricing unit, which looks specifically at the issues. That is international best practice. There are two models internationally. One, you either have the ordinary auditors looking at this with expert advice from the public pricing experts, or you create dedicated capacity. We felt dedicated capacity made more sense because this can get really complicated. That's what technical advice can do. It is very capital intensive if you look at how the value chain is together, where is value added in this organization, who makes the decision, what are their business models. And that unfortunately means these audits take quite a while. We say 18 months. I am aware of transfer pricing audits internationally that have taken 10 years from the start to their sort of first call case. So it can take a while. We try to be on the lower end of the scale. So what do? We focus on a high risk, high value. And as a result, over the last 3 years, we've looked at more than 50 cases, we've now audited them, and we've made transfer pricing adjustments. I see customers have got the same from this slide. I apologize. Of just over 20 billion rand. That's conservative. And the tax impact is on the order of 5 billion rand. That's the last 3 years. We're busy with a similar number of cases at present. And obviously, when we've been auditing, we're also busy risk assessing from a network of cases to be audited. So it's a high priority. So, let's get back to our engagement with the international space. Because transfer pricing involves transactions across borders, we need to have strong international focus here. We need to be doing things that other countries are comfortable with. Because when you make an adjustment, you may need to engage with the other countries to make sure that they are happy. We want more profit that means they get less. At times, if it's a country where there is no tax system or there's a low tax rate, but if it's a country which also has a solid tax system, they're going to be looking at us and saying, are you sure you deserve more profit? Can you justify why they didn't say that you say so? And so we need to be part of the international sort of space here. Also, this is where the standards are developed, so we need to play an active role. We'll be South Africa are very much part of this. We're working with the OECD, Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the United Nations, the African Tax Administration Forum, the World Bank, and then we have a separate forum between India and the Muslim Bank. So here's a picture of what's happening there. And so at the OECD, we're involved from the high ends all the way down. Sunita is a member of the management committee of what's known as the Committee of Fiscal Affairs, which is the sort of umbrella body of tax at the OECD. We're involved in a dedicated working party, so working party 1, 6 transfer party, 11 tax working. I am the co-chair of working party 6. Tax force and tax development, this is something that is developing countries, we buy experts there. The Global Forum on Exchange of Information, which is about exchanging information around the world. Chrissy Lowe, our Chief Legal and Policy Officer, so is the chair of the Global Forum. And obviously we're part of the next project. At the United Nations, Michelle Gassai, who is our head of our transparency unit, she's also a working party 6. She is very much involved in the transparency guide of the United Nations. At the World Bank, we're working with them as a perspective. At ATAC, we give support with respect to BEPS, the technical working group, and obviously there's people in there. That's the African Tax Administration and then IPSA, that's a cooperative, it's sort of a subset of BRICS where we work together, we have technical workshops, we share experience and try to make sure we're on top of what happens. And I think that's the point MoMA has already made. Transfer this pricing in the extractive industry, no different than from any other industry. If you have, we've faced similar challenges, we do similar work. Obviously, because it's a significant industry in the South African context and there are a limited number of players, it's an area we can focus on it and where we have made adjustments. So where do we go from here? Obviously, we're going to continue trying to build this transfer pricing capacity. We continue trying to talk to MNEs to get them to up their game when it comes to compliance. And if you're interested, that does sometimes have a impact. I'm aware of MNEs that have decided to change their risk appetite for state, where they've moved off from being what we would consider aggressive to being more moderate. And that's the best development we can get there. We're trying to improve our audit processes, obviously where we can. product size of our strategies to modernize. We will continue to engage with international firms. Very important, we work with other tax administrations. We will continue to do so. Because it can arise in two circumstances. Perhaps we have a direct transaction with a tax administration in this jurisdiction, in which case we need to work together to come to the right answer. Or perhaps there is a tax haven language between us, and we need to attack the problem from by far to get to the right answer. So there's a lot of room for work there. And there's also room to learn from what other countries have done when it comes to their strategies. Obviously, we're going to have to work with National Treasury and the Tax Committee to see what comes out of this and to implement that. And obviously, make a proposal. And some of the proposals we're thinking of, the specific investment requirements of our documentation. Some countries have this, it's a growing trend internationally. You do need to be careful that you don't ask too much for them to have a heads up. We need to underpin the bets. So, as an example, we've decided internationally what the template should look like. We're busy deciding how it should get from one country to another. And once those decisions have been taken, we're going to need to bring legislation to Parliament as possible to help us enforce them. And then finally, as partly a customer service and partly a tool to help us improve compliance, something called an advanced pricing agreement. We're instead of dealing with audits after the fact, you agree with the taxpayer up front how they're going to deal with the transaction. They bring you all the information. And then you agree with them and with the treaty partners involved, with the treaty partner, how you're going to deal with the particular transaction up front. It's complicated, but this is maybe the industry getting into. Something we always have to bear in mind is transfer pricing is a big issue. We need to be very careful to make sure we counter it. But on the flip side of the coin, we shouldn't go overboard about it because it does impact on our international investors. And we need to maintain a proper balance with particular international norms, keep things within those guidelines, and give investors a degree of certainty in our costs. So, on our side, we've got a lot that needs to be done. We're always working. There are some of the issues we think we need to bear in mind. We need to increase our capability, we need to tighten up on our legislation based on what's coming out of the international processes. We need to bear in mind that there's not something that you're going to get a quick win out of this. We need painstaking work, especially if you intend to have a stick, either in court or when you're negotiating with another tax authority, competent authority about the adjustments. And that's the last point, really. There's no easy solution. We're working within the compliance both by the domestic and our international obligations. So, there's just a have to touch on the taxes that come with liberalization, cost of pricing, and the price of globalization. We might just be boring. We have our leave.
Any questions of clarity?
come out of the government. So if I happen to mention my name, you must know it's not a bad time. Where if you want to get a ID from somebody, you rather change your name, reduce name, so that you keep the data from hand. But I don't want to do that.
Your citizens, your individual, your context here. Now, what what I feel strongly about, probably the comment before I ask the question, is that it does look as though we are really being threatened by the global capital here. You know, we are spending slowly with our, you know, our debt has our cross-currency deposits look like. Because if you look at this, at the world right now, the fact is 85%, I mean 85% people, they actually control as much wealth as 3.5 billion people in the world. And if you look at it, it's not a South African phenomenon, yes, we agree. However, I think probably there has to be a way of beginning to make this not just an ethical issue, because it's been reduced to a moral and ethical issue, as opposed to being a criminal issue. You know, because at the end of the day, as developing countries in particular, we are being threatened. And the inequalities, I mean, they are just so far. But what I wanted to do, especially within respect of this particular conversation that we are, since this is a joint committee, is how accurate or how close to accuracy is the percentage of the GDP of mines that we are attributing in terms of the size that we have here. And also, the reason why I'm also asking that is because understanding that, I mean, the whole thing about transverse and tech-based erosion is very complex. The reality of the situation is that it is estimated that the mining alone, I know that you are probably downplaying it, but mining alone is actually estimated to be doing this funny scheme. It is costing us 1 trillion. Some of them are actually happening that it's going to take as much as well. Now, the next question is, have we actually done the research? Yes, I understand the work that you are always doing at OECD and so forth, but have we actually, as South Africa, embarked on research to quantify sector by sector as to how much of risk we have or how much is each sector costing us, even if it's just a basket thing, so that we know what we are dealing with? And I am saying this because I'm an elected representative, and people are actually beginning to say, what are you people doing about our own lives as citizens? And you've seen it in the business day, you've seen it in every day, but people are beginning to really make a lot of noise about it, and we need to start doing something about it. The other thing that I think is a final thing that I also wanted to know is that when it comes to us as South Africa now, I hear that we are saying we have that dedicated unit that is dealing with transfer pricing. Now, if we have that dedicated unit, I'm just a bit confused whether you are only in that dedicated unit. Is it evolving from tech-based erosion, or is it it's just the name of the unit, but you are actually linking the two? Because to me, all the two are almost like identical twins. They go together. And all the time when you see these things are missing, they normally come together. And finally, probably we might have me here. I'm actually more worried. I know this has got nothing to do with this particular committee, but I'm more worried about those that are involved in the financial or in the services sector who are involved in this. And they're actually advisors of government as well. They also advise us, what are we doing about those companies that are doing this? Because it's like they are robbing us. Those are actually robbing us. They lie. Because we are actually paying them to rob us. And I think, there are a lot of examples, and obviously you are saying it's very confidential, but we've got to become very transparent sooner or later. We've got to become transparent because we read about these things and they worry us because we know these people are doing business with government and they are actually involved in these kinds of things. Thank you.
Thank you, this presentation. I'd like to hear the good remarks about Trump. with regard to the certainty that is provided within the strategy, because I think that is the crux that holds confidence for businesses. And taking care of the challenges with regard to the corporate tax rate. If you look at the company tax rate, 20%, and in the 81% that's reflected in terms of the direction of individual 34 and value added at 26, is very low. There might be some problem with regard to confidence from corporates to invest in Philadelphia. And certainly, from your presentation, I don't think there doesn't seem to be evidence of taxation. I'll just mention what my personal view is in terms of how I think it's the problem. But certainly, we need the revenue from corporates with regard to the issue that you swim deficit, and you've mentioned that we need a new in the running last deficit, so that's certainly an exception to this. But I'm trying to make the point that we need 44 billion rand to be needed to have other policy statements. And we are saying that clearly we will have tax increases that will be the best. I think for the next 14, 15 years, 10 billion rand will be needed. That the corporate payment statute set up to the place in which it should encourage corporates to invest in South Africa, to grow the tax economy on the very low rate of 1.4%, and not have tax imposed on the current companies, on increasing that and on individuals, but rather look at alternatives that we propose over and over again with regard to that. Investing the 30 billion rand of corruption tax levy. Other alternatives, this is just another thing, to get responsible sector in terms of tax administration that we don't want to go for. I would just like to mention then, for me also, and for my other colleagues, it's just shocking that the GDP real growth the sector indicates that mining has had zero growth in terms of, I think it's from 2000 to 2013. That is just unacceptable, and we should certainly ask that this committee or the committee that the Labour Committee said this. And finally, I think there's a structural constraint. These structural constraints include labor, which is my personal opinion. But we put our heads together, and how can we make recommendations in terms of the rest of our problems? We've seen for the fact that the flux in labor, and I think this certain thing, that's my opinion, could play a large role in terms of dedicated tax before us. Mining is falling 18%, and then the steady decline up to 8% and 7%. It is just fallen by my view that labor problems took very much closer. So thank you very much for the presentation. That was significantly important. I would just like to say, with regard to the question of France, with regard to the center that you proposed, this is not late in the day, and that's why I think that's my colleague's concern in terms of getting transfer pricing regular. It is not late in the day from now. A lot of work, we can clearly see that it's dedicated units, a lot of work has been done, very sensitive, we have consulted international, we have consulted other countries. But it's not late in the day, it's only now that the thing is about. It is not late in the day that now we have proposed these different legislation that will come to us. And then lastly, perhaps, the health story of the 20, certainly the banks in terms of the prudent regulation will also play a massive role in so like say detecting the cost of funds. It will have also play a role in terms of the prudent prudent regulation, but in terms of the cost of funds.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
It's not fair that we get a lot here today because there isn't one person on the agenda. They have too much to say about it. And I thought you were going to have friends debate on this matter so that you can hear what is happening based on what the more TV reports today. But I'm going to reserve my comments because, you know, we also have state party like we're supposed to discuss important matters. Sometimes those party lines are not applicable. I'm going to speak to my a moment job will be very simple because I'm going to ask a simple and straightforward question. Now let me start with this. I want to know what is the financial implication for others for all these things that have happened. Do we have experience with what we think that there's value for money to keep? and do this type of work, and doesn't affect our budget. Because it only used the result many, many years. And the reason why I'm saying this is clear. We don't know how much budget was in the pipeline. And what will be the reaction of countries where there's management tax system in an event that you experience inflation. But the other issue, I want to know whether members of the working parties are safe for the new report. Because tax avoidance is not that are average people. So the security of the people who do that type of work, and what has been the experience so far. So when you build that security capacity beyond the financial capacity. And now that there's a new template, have you experienced advanced digital systems impeding to the audit from the first one? Because that is one of the things that will impede on the auditing work, that there will always be introduction of advanced digital templates to make it difficult for your work to be achieved. And even all those templates are there, have you considered not making them a permanent template so that they shift now and then to be able to change systems that are making it difficult to audit. So to me, it should be an element of value for money. Instead, I'll make an example. If the Constitutional Commission says wants to change people who are dealing with taxes in England, but going to cause them, what are they going to change them? Is that value for money? It's not whether it's a moral question or it's a criminal issue. It's the funds and the time that are going to be invested in doing this, in shifting environment, which makes it very difficult and very insecure environment. And don't misunderstand, that's why I said I'm going to reserve my personal beliefs and comments in terms of what should be done. Because it's not about the intensity of the work and the risk it involves and the financial implications, so that when we take decisions to deal with it, we know there's zero money, it's not shifting us from our initial program with just chasing companies, but just doing what should be the primary task of this institution. So I have not made my connection in that question.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. I'm a bit nervous. Yeah, no, I'm sort of a bit nervous. Chris, you know, I think Congress Makoti has also covered me and Congress Tandy on election things. The vulnerability of people who are conducting some of these activities from the government side. Their safety, their vulnerability, because they're dealing with smart or sophisticated people who are capable of manipulating and doing other things. So I'm not sure how, you know, we make sure that our people don't want to pay off some of these things. Because you know what big companies are capable of doing. You know, there's also an enabler that our president has also spoke to, reviewing treaties and legislation that must be amended and so on and so on. I think these are some of the things that we must know very quickly so that we also prioritize them, because these are enablers for them to be able to participate and implement some of the things, especially because in this regard, SARS is playing in an international space and transactions happen across the borders and they have to really comply. So we have to see how we enable our officials to be able to do this. The last issue, Chair, can be a return question Is there a serious trend emerging amongst multinational companies? Should we be scared when people come to South Africa to come and invest? Are they seeing us as a haven for transfer pricing and profit shifting? Or what, you know, just for us to see whether are we able to manage some of the activities in multinational companies?
We don't know
I mean, how some of these practices are being undertaken. And are there, what are the current, because to me it's very important, and I think it's also amplifying the question posed by Honorable Kodiak, the issue of the capacity of staff, I mean, to deal with this challenge. What are the current administration capacity? But also, as we intend to enhance, I mean, your operation in this space, what are the administration capacity in the region? And you make mention of legislative measures that you have a suggestion that need to be considered to deal with this I'm not sure if you are the benchmark, because you know one of the things that we are truly surprised at the government of the day is that we are legislating a lot. I'm not sure if we are to benchmark. Is there any country that we can learn from, country that we can learn from, in as far as the introduction of these legislative measures is concerned? And last, Chair, just as more clarity, because I get also Honorable Maposa raised the issue of the legality of the transfer price, because from where I'm sitting, my understanding is that, and the 70 years, therefore, yes, this one is not going to be. So this is one of the hands in the struggle, I mean, to clarify the issue of the formulation. So we were going to raise this question, and we were going to add that we need to make sure that transfer pricing is legalized. But from where I'm sitting, I didn't know how our organization issues. I can tell that the transfer price is more of a tool to cooperate, I mean, to avoid the checks. And tax avoidance, even to individuals, is not something that is needed. I think we're confusing tax avoidance and tax evasion. Maybe you should come out here and explain to this community what is the legal thing around this issue. Is it possible for us to betray any legal practice?
Thank you. I think so to call a chance in front of the member of the leg, they are actually connecting the leg into the leg. So that's what we are saying. No, I don't wish to control the observation that made that to me. Probably the secretary should have been the doctor and said, okay. Never expect a budget to see the first of the
He's the only one who can read one hero. One quick thing. I was in a plane in 1996, and I was transferred from economy to business class. Next to me was an elderly woman. And as the plane began to sing, it was 1998, I remember. She said, are you a professor of mathematics? I said, oh, I don't want to be in mathematics. That's my work started. She said, so I noticed when she got on the plane, this is all the equation. I said, what equation? And she said, your handwriting. My husband is writing, he's a professor. So I said, no, it's the municipal structure fund. And I was finalizing it, you know, the last 2 minutes. So then she said to me, of course, these are glorious things. She said, what do you do? I'm very proud to say I'm a member of Parliament. So now this teacher asked me the question. You know, the usual question. First, to be correct, and it's an elderly white woman, presumably voted for the National Party of DP. She wants to know whether she could be excellent announcer or whatever. So I said, well, how do I get? It's important to hear that. But anyway, yes, no. Firstly, I'm really struck by you saying that we are almost leading globally on the issue of the digital economy and taxes. Actually, there's a little split of insight into what happens in the United States. But I'm surprised because our ICT sector is not that, you know, up there.
long, long time ago, I was in the text and thinking this thing, but my sense of, please talk to me, yet again you leave. Now, I'm going to tell you, by the way, it's quite difficult to manage time. They must have been in global panic, doing extremely well. They end up number one in the world in economic times and so on. It's a regrettable country. What do they know at the moment? Any university. Whatever it means, this thing that's been the Sunday Times Union, it has to be dealt with very, very silently and effectively. But that's another issue. Because, you know, after sitting question, tell us a bit about why. Why is it that we so advanced? Given the global sense, possibly by ICT figures. Secondly, what I want to ask is, why should countries cooperate? What's the extent of cooperation globally? I mean, the kind of cooperation, not in general. Do you think the countries that are benefiting, the small little islands that are coming to the first world, others, why should they actually cooperate in the global sphere? Because they're going to lose out. There's no win-win situation here. If I am correct, I sometimes see figures banged around, but I tell you, business is my fault, right? Finland, by the way, he takes that capital from the U.S. Since May, when it is doing insurance, put down a point to check. So thirdly, I want to ask you, I read somewhere, in English and business thing, that the flow of money outside our continent to the developed world is greater than the other way around. Whether this applies directly to the issues we're looking at, concrete crisis, conflict shifting, state erosion, with it more than that. I remember the previous question of our country, Pavel Veki, was appointed by the EU government to look at this issue. Now, is this related to this matter? If so, where is that project? Is it not true that we on this continent are the losers? And if that's the case, why do the developed countries of the world who are in a severe crisis, quickly little of those stuff, why should they cooperate? What's in it for them? Next thing I want to say is, what's the big deal here at the end of the day? What is capital? You don't have to be a Marxist. But they're doing what capital would do, especially in the globalized arena. But the question that's raised is an absolutely legitimate question, which is capacity but also resources and energy. How much, what's the outcome? In other words, you're going to pursue it at a great cost, but presumably the gains will outweigh that. Now, in regard to that, it seems to me that is a plausible argument that the game was. For example, we might be accurate to say that the more we engage with these issues, as much as it takes very long, and as much as we don't have the necessary capacity, we can develop that capacity by engaging with it. But more importantly, it will get easier over time. In other words, 5 to 10 years from now, presumably, bearing in mind that capital and time speeds have invented we are always outflanking regulated agencies, we will get easier. It will get easier. So the cost that we bear now will have long-term benefits. Secondly, it provides the basis for policy and legislation. So if we engage now, we can possibly bring a bill in due course. Although I bear in mind the fact that this is really, really the best way to deal with these things. Presumably, it keeps changing as well. But thirdly, I think that it's the right thing to do. There's a sometimes greater cost because it's corruption, actually. And the free market must also play by the rules of fair play. So we must hold capital to account. So I really think that this is something that must be pursued. But it's also part of a multifaceted strategy. You know, it's not just dealing with the effects, it's also dealing with other related issues. Then, I want to say, presumably, there's no way of recouping past losses. In other words, if you find out that 3 years ago, this is what the country was, you can't use retrospectively. I wish you could, because it doesn't know. But I'm asking you again, because it's the right thing to do. I mean, if you must pay up, if you can find out that 2 years ago, they did this thing. Then I think also, I think we should alert your colleagues and colleagues. One of the reasons, there's not two reasons. One of the reasons we put this issue on the agenda is the ESF. It's regrettable they don't care, but I will repeat to them what I said. They keep reading the same text. If you Google Hansa, you will see the same line. I've seen
deep sea ocean transportation, it's generality. So we did to them about 3 weeks ago. But now I can go beyond that. In anticipation of this meeting, can you in 10 days' time give us a concrete paper, even if it's 3 or 4 pages? What exactly are you saying beyond that? I thought as long as I was, we get to see this. But if you're not going, I'll have to let you know about the conference. People are not here, they will look up to that. And so on. But I will raise what I've raised here, tendency, if that's not applied to us. Then I also want to say that, of course, I'm sympathetic, and I am, because I'm not very familiar with the area, that this is a very complex, difficult, changing area. So you can't set a clear timeline for designation, clear performance objectives and goals and targets and so on. While that is the case, surely there is a need for some broad timelines and deadlines and objectives to see where things occur. This committee, and I'm sure both of us, to the extent responsibility for that, will be monitoring that. So we need from you the next time we meet clearer deadlines. Even the broad goals, you know, obviously the world function is passed by because you haven't done it by you couldn't achieve things as well. It's not like your performance objective in ADP, you know, and other things, broader things. Finally, I think, you know, if you are moving in the direction of legislation, I think it would be useful to engage with us more. And we have to take into account the sensitivity of legislation and so on. But also, that is not can do. That's not intended. Even at the very least, you ask your dictionary, you say to us, we cannot discuss the tax rules at all, answer that question. But that doesn't stop us from holding the question, which is a way of putting some sort of pressure on a particular actual reason. It also signals to you what parliamentary committee should be done about it. We're in big trouble, yeah. 1.4% growth. There's no life, the life of all life. And most of the government is the same. We need the taxpayers we need. And we can't afford it. And ever more we need to do more to give the taxpayers we need. Why should the average individual pay their taxes if large companies make huge super profits and not paying what they should actually pay? Even make the problem that being in your house. Raising this issue. I don't know whether he will actually remain in the DNA, speak with him, but Mr. Lorimer, they have come out. But he is simply saying, increase corporate taxes, right? And of course, you remind me, he said, well, stop labor out there.
So, but generally, if there's been a concern in our I think somewhere still this is not wrong. We have been part of some honorable members of the I think honorable from there also is there has to be clarity. I understand the farmer. There has to be clarity. Because when we have been debating, we expect we have never had the intent to pay. But we're quite clear that this is not a matter that generally plays only one department can ask for possibility. It's not that there's any issue of quality assessment. So it's completely quite complex for our community to change every policy. But the issue that I ask people in this room is that you can clarify that one. One, they trust us and they like us. There is a profit scheme, the basis. Now, listening to this presentation, then something has come. There is an issue of the Competition Commission, which mainly deals with issues of unfair trade or unfair pricing. Now, you do have the perception, but at the base of it, there is a submission is one of these things I'm saying. Comparatively, or making comparison, may be quite difficult because companies do want to share. But indirectly, it becomes unfair trade in some cases. And I think it's important to make that change. Because if you come to a conclusion to say it is transfer pricing, it may not be done about how much we are taking away in terms of revenue, but also how much competitive advantage, unfair competitive advantage, does it give. So that in the final analysis, if you look at legislation, you look at whether you would need the legislation that is overarching, that also takes that fact into consideration. Because in my view, the list might also exist that you may address it. And I always say, whether we like it or not, matters of tax are always put in test at the time. Because there, look for another opportunity. Because in the final analysis, it's about making sure that you can accumulate the net maximum profit without incurring as many costs as possible. Otherwise, we would make money if this would bring us someone to do anything. But unfortunately, it requires certain processes to be followed in order to accumulate. So I'm saying, in the answer, is there a possibility of the two collaborating? Even if it's about also answer politicians, that we have. If you have to pay one company and the other, sure, I think it's what also is doing. Sometimes I prefer you that I said nothing. Is it illegal or is it legal? Which one becomes illegal and which one becomes illegal? Because to pursue something that is legal, it may not be necessarily that those people are entitled to do things wrong. But is it an act that is legal? Let's also take further. What are the indicators? For me, it's not that easy question. But one of the things that will tell us is not how wrong a certain or an entity can be, an institution can be. It's also how much it will cost. Probably, I think that's why some of the honorable doctors are talking about the value for money at the level of investigation, but also the value for money at the level of defending legal challenges. Because it's not automatic, you say, this one is connecting us to the transfer pricing and causing this. If you are challenged, because even in the Competition Commission, some of the issues that you follow the list, I don't agree to that. The cost implication of proving the correctness of pursuing the matter at a legal level may be too costly. So I would, it's not a question that you are asked. It's a question of how do you sustain your correctness. So I think it's important, what are the steps for the stage? For a lot of the legislation from your country, it indicates that issue. Then the third point which I thought you said, you are minded, you are interested. I must say, with a few months after this committee, there are certain things that I've discovered with due respect. I sometimes believe that some of the things when they are presented to me, they are not the same when they are presented to me. In my view, it's a new discovery, only applied Because imagine that was happening. When you apply the phase 2, if they don't establish a position, and that's what it is called by now. This is a slide on the test position chart. Slide gauge. You see your issue, because every point you must get started on this thing. The step 2 response on tech and corporate session. It then says there is a separate module for me that applies on both. And the question is, I was not aware that is. So, unfortunately, it's not there. I can't relate to it. If somebody says to me, what is that for me? How different it is, and what informs that against me. But one thing that is said is that there is something that is new. We're battling with the issue of illegal mining, we're battling with the issue of ownerless and private. Now, bullet 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it then says amount of taxes. My method is actually for post-mining rehabilitation provision. To honest, it's new. And on this side, this is one issue that I'm just saying it's a tight issue. But there is something that if that we can find an affair, how that something that can be so generally, some of us are understood to be something that is part of what the MRs are putting in the absence. In instances where these families and families might exist. The other half is that in some cases, we have to use as well. It's a test that is referred specifically for that and how possible, what mechanisms or procedures that we follow to affect. Because when we look at it, even when it says, even the decisions we have made, in the report, beautiful as it was. It was more like, coming from treasure, but this is the manner from heaven. This allocation that was given after putting the motivation. It is based on something that is sometimes specifically for that, and to what extent can that be intended to that. So I think that those for me at that area that say, but also, maybe to get that clarity on this issue. So that whether we take consideration of the decision of money, would it make sense to start that process without taking due consideration on the issue of the daily tax commission reform? That's why we're sitting here in the Postal Committee, the work that is being done. But not sure what would be the recommendation of the tax, of the daily tax commission. Is it something that was considering, and that's why to come here. I know it's a matter that will come to all the different implications to other areas. It is a matter that will require that we take that into consideration. And what would be the justification for us to know? In fact, any other thing, I don't have mine. Yes, it's going to decline, but even if it's going to decline, it's one of the major contributions to the system. But why so low in terms of tax? Because even if it's there, but it's so low in terms of, I'm not sure whether it's going to be basic. Because the percentage may not have to come to the quantity of it. It is a relative to the size in terms of the entities, not in terms of production of. So you can get clarity on that as well. It was the reason people are making us now putting specifically so much focus on money. It's because of what they do, but also being aware of what was, I know it's a matter that is absolutely, but there was a very serious condition that was there around a big multinational company doing the successful running. So get up on the fact that we can part of the weather. But has there been research done on that presentation on this correctness? That it has been a common practice that no meaning. I'm not saying it's true, but
But it's a fact that it's rather than in the public domain, that is something to change. Especially in the scenario that you find ourselves in now in the Kachina. So I think those are the areas that must be taken.
Thank you, chair. I think there's lots of questions and try and share among ourselves. Can I just start by maybe making two big points? I think what we've tried to show is, firstly on mining, that from a text perspective, whilst there are some mining specific issues, but generally, what happens in mining is not different from what happens in other sectors. So, for example, and I don't want to go by newspaper reports say on one company, but I can tell you that the mechanisms that company may use, I said across the JSC, whether you look at finance companies, others, they tend to use similar vehicles. Okay. So again, this is not a mining issue. And I think it would be wrong also, because I know when people look at one company, it becomes like a conspiracy or like something that's wrong, okay? And that gets to my second point on what's illegal and what's legal, which I'll come to in a second. I want to just say that there's very little that's specific, and some of the issues that you're dealing with, let's take mine. We work with other government partners. If the issue is to rehabilitate, mining rehabilitation, we may provide a tax incentive. This will give us the detail. Okay? So it's not a tax, but it's a reduction that may happen on expenditure made, for example. So it takes away from the tax, makes it lower. But it's a sweetener, okay, to try and get you to do the right thing. And that's the point I want to get to on the tax. Tax is generally a very blunt tool. You can't use the tax system to generally get specific behavior, but having said that, I'm going to contradict myself. On the margin, you can get tax, not just to raise revenue, but to move in the right direction. So, for example, the issue of redistribution is a big tax objective. And if you look at the World Bank study this week or two ago, it shows just how progressive our personal income tax system is, for example, for our tax system generally, compared to others. Secondly, you know, we impose sin taxes to get you to do the right, to get you not to do the wrong thing. So on tobacco we impose a excise tax. But that by itself will not work. You've got to put other measures like banning people from smoking in rooms, spending them outside. You know, you need, you know, those adverts. So you need a package of measures. And taxes forms one part of that. And I think some of these provisions you've got to see that way. Of course, the issues of equity, and if you look at the principles, and you talk in that not across, or it's a vertical, but vertical is one thing, but the equity across, you want to see similar groups, similar. Okay. So tax has lots of these objectives. And yes, I think the book, for example, by Thomas Piketty on capital as well in the 21st century, I think raises a lot of issues. They're not only a tax issue. I think to the extent that you have inequality in society, it's clearly a source for instability. How do societies deal with it? Those are broader issues. And the tax system can help, but can't be the only instrument to achieve certain objectives. So I think we must just obviously have that perspective, and I'm not getting that perspective by any means. And as I said, on mining too, there are other issues. South Africa has been seen to miss the commodity boom, okay, of what, 2004, 2008, there's a lot that said. So the fact that it didn't grow wasn't something only for mining, and I think what Honorable Ross is seeing, not here at the moment. But those are issues that clearly we need to look at because, you know, the figure of GDP mining's contribution, it's not wrong. I mean, can't just say it's wrong because it's low. You know, our GDP is correct. But of course, there are, if you want to assume it's correct, obviously, and that's evidence to the contrary. But
But of course, the Indian religions are strong. And that's why you saw that when you had a prolonged strike, the impact on growth was to put us into negative growth territory. Okay? Because mining affects four times of the related industries around the suppliers, it affects miners who get their salaries, what they spend on. And clearly the effect is much more than its GDP contribution. So I think that is acknowledged as well. But I guess the bigger question is, mining is a very important part of the South African economy, given its GDP direct contribution is not as large as other sectors like manufacturing and finance. But to the extent that there are blockages, it's important to unblock them. And that's an issue. I think just with regard to some of the other more general questions, yes, other countries wouldn't want to cooperate and do a bit exam. Each major economy has tended to not care too much about emerging market economies. The fact that they now care has been pretty much forced to. Okay. We've seen growth in other countries. People can do unto them what they did unto us for a long, long time. So there's a new motivation to cooperate. And I think that those are exciting initiatives, and we must make sure that these are not just there in the current plan, but become a permanent feature of the system. And of course, we should be, I don't think anyone here is naive about why countries are being forced to go in this direction. And dealing with tax havens and stepping out their behavior is important. And we can tell you we have double tax agreements which are not signed because it's convenient for those countries not to sign. You even get South African companies who lobby those because they are based there to get a country to oppose it. We need to be tougher on those countries and deal with those sort of issues. I think the other issue of even fines, like in the tax system generally, we don't try and be retrospective. You know, and let me deal particularly with mine. Mine is a 50-year 20 to 50 year investment. So if you have a gold formula book, for example, that applies, you can have one, what? You know, maybe long before we were born, many of us, okay? And the thing is that you cannot change it on existing mines. You can always change tax policy for new investments that come in the future. But you can't change the rules for existing investments. And that gets to the core as well, why you can't also, you know, countries have, and there's prescription and so on, but say, within 3 or 5 years, they can take action against taxes you haven't paid. And when you find a company, like in the financial sector, it's fine. Unfortunately, you really could be just, you'd make sure it's the shareholders at the time who pay the price. Now if you pay for a sin 5 years ago, it's your new shareholders who pay the price. Okay? And remember, there could be pension funds who are big. So, and one just needs to take that into account, which is not to say there shouldn't be fines, there must be. And that's what you get to the shareholders, you get to the point Francis made. If companies are going to be taxed better in their approach, they must know with certainty that one day they may be found out, and shareholders will suffer. So that's why any highly modern company today will attempt to have a best practice and be less taxed than them. Get back to the issue of what's legal and illegal. I think what comes is, and what we've been saying is there's a place, and transfer pricing is important in the globalized world and one investment and so on. It's transfer mispricing that is a problem. And similarly, you find that often, you know, if you break the law, it's illegal, it's tax evasion. But that you find a narrow testing. There's still a lot of scope to interpret, and that's where you get tax avoidance. And yes, you know, you have, and I don't like them, I think all these predatory firms that make the money on tax structure, okay? I don't think they're patriotic to any country, I think they're only patriotic to making as much money for themselves and damn the rest. And to improve the ethics would be a good initiative. And that's why, you know, when you look at the tax legislation, they come. You've got to take them, not a pinch of salt, but lots of salt. Okay? Yeah. Because they have no shame about betting for themselves. and put newspaper articles, capacity, score, this, that, look behind them, okay? They don't get their way, and we've got to say, we don't give them their way, we listen to reason, we apply our minds, and that's when we make changes to our system. But lobbying is an essential part of the tax system. Just with regards to some of the other issues, so, and of course, to the extent that people avoid or take legal action, the cost that is going to be quite a difficult issue. I think, Jay, you talked about the integrity of science. So, given the issue of confidentiality, even if legally SARS could say something in Parliament, the point is the credibility. People feel that SARS is not enforcing confidentiality to the extent expected. Their credibility is on the line, and that's a very important asset to protect. And that's why even in the Treasury, we come here to make sure they are protected from some of those threats. But as I said, nothing stops Parliament calling any company can deal with the capacity issues and ask them if they are reports. In fact, any company worth salt will want to explain that those reports are correct or not. But again, you get two reports, you know, there's a lot of spicing up of reports. Whether they're accurate is another thing. One needs to look at all these reports pretty carefully. I think the last set of points I'd like to make is when it comes to cooperation, we also like to think that South Africa will not do unto other countries, especially on our continent, as what was done to us by the advanced economies. So the question is, as our companies operate on our continent, how can we get a better tax approaches? I think that's something, especially a lot of our companies are going into those countries, and I think that's an important area. There's from an aspirational perspective that we need to look at. I think just on the questions on CIT, South Africa's revenue is relatively high compared to other countries, compared to other taxes. And so, you know, it's not that one should be getting more from this focus or less. It is relatively high, and one does need to look at issues of competitiveness, okay? Which is how we compare to other countries. So that does drive investment. People are not going to invest their funds when they feel that we're not as competitive as others. That's something we should worry about. It's quite an important area to look at. I think the one other point I wanted to make, dealt with Africa, dealt with, before I put hard questions to ask for these, okay, like on the value for money and so on. Okay, maybe it will come back to me. But so I just think broadly that's the approach we have. You want certainty, mining wants 50 years certainty, your tax system does need to operate in a particular way. And tax is not the way to deal with a lot of other issues. I think mining is a issue. And as I said, if you look at initiatives like the EITI, I do think that South Africa should look at it and consider joining such initiatives. They were started to deal with abuses by mining companies because the intimacy of power, especially in our continent, is a problem. When countries like Zambia are reliant on one commodity, you know, the companies have them over barrel and trying to get international practices where they actually behave well and don't abuse that sort of power against companies. Anna, do you want to say anything for Jenny?
Thank you. I think the chair talked about the incident of the legislation about the region benchmarking into the coming from tech policy legislation, yes, we do. And said that there is that tech commission which is looking at the mine tech and what we can do, what we cannot do. And as something that in terms of debt and transfer pricing, that those committees, they look at all other countries. And then it's not like education is assessment that you need to do with that benchmark and then you see what you like, what is not right, and what you can do as a country, what you cannot do. And in terms of operation, as Mo has said, it's a win-win for both developing countries and developed countries. As we have said that considering the purpose of the Global Forum on Exchange of Information, I used to work on that, it got slow. And it has re-elected for the second time. When we're doing the other things of the countries in terms of exchange of information with other countries, it helps because it's not only the developed countries, but the developing countries in terms of cooperation, he felt something, no, the technology should be in Uganda, not in Asia. So that cooperation has to say, no, even if it's a UK company, but this UK company was operating in Uganda, so the technology are in Uganda. So the cooperation has been also in that regard. Although that cooperation is not also for the exchange of information, there's also another aspect that people can have, the assistance in tech collection, whereby if a resident, someone from the UK was here in South Africa or UK, but now it's gone, it's in the UK. In terms of cooperation, South Africa can ask UK to collect taxes due to South Africa, but UK will assist in collecting those taxes. So that is the kind of cooperation that is used in terms of exchange of information and cooperation between countries.
If you're submitting maybe just to touch on the mining tax regime, rehabilitation and old mining reform in a very brief manner, and I'll try not to bore you with any technicalities. But basically, the biggest allowance or benefit to the mining industry is the capital expenditure allowance. It can be a benefit or not, depending on the circumstances of each individual company. And it basically provides for 100% reduction of capital expenditure, as opposed to maybe 40%, 20%, 25%. The provider is, however, it is limited to a set of against mining income, so make a distinction between mining and non-mining income. And you cannot create a loss for this capital expenditure. If you have no mining capital expenditure, you get no deduction, and it gets paid forward for years. And certain factors until you do have profits and then you do have the benefits. So the retention concept of mining versus non-mining income is a first and important factor that to consider when you use that as capital expenditure. It goes further to reinstate the reduction of that expenditure between separate and distinct mining operations. So yes, if you have more than one mine and it's clearly separate and distinct, then you cannot set off one mine expenditure against another mine. They're basically effectively taxed in silos. There are some rules to permit access to the capital expenditure of another mine, but that is sustained around new mine developments, which was commenced after 1990. And in a nutshell, that's basically the mining regime, very, very ideal. In turning to rehabilitation, I think it's also one thing important to remember that since 2004 we had a budget, we can call it a regime change where ownership of mineral resources was revoked from individuals or corporates, and effectively all mineral resources in South Africa is owned by civil society. The state act as a custodian on behalf of civil society. With a mining right or with mining, once that license is issued, it becomes the obligation of rehabilitation. And it's actually quite an important concept following the enactment of the North Atlantic and the Resource Development Act, in that it goes hand in hand. Whoever gets the license, that's the liability to rehabilitate. If you do not govern and manage or regulate that, that's responsibility, and all of a sudden the entity is missing and there's a void, then unfortunately it becomes government's responsibility to rehabilitate or flood the hole. That's why we brought in the rehabilitation provision, which basically states that any amount paid in cash into any trust body or even a corporation which needs certain criteria will be granted as a deduction against the taxable income. There are certain quite stringent provisions to the body or the trust that gets created, which in itself is also exempt from that. You are only allowed to use the cash for rehabilitation. So basically, if the cash goes in, it can never go out unless it's used to close the hole. And the closure of the hole is effectively governed by the entity itself, with the mine as well as the DMR, which actually regulates the process, sign off on the work done, which effectively allows the payment of the work done. So that is in a nutshell the rehabilitation provision.
There are some severe penalty provisions through that legislation should you by chance decide to take some of the money out for purposes other than rehabilitation. In terms of the gold mining formula, it's a very old piece of legislation, and it works on a sliding scale of taxation. It comes to anything from 0 to 34%. And it's based on the concept of taxable income, which you expect as a percentage over the total income from gold mining. So the more profitable that your operations are, the higher you move up the sliding scale. And you could also be down at the bottom end and pay you a zero tax in any given year. The whole reason for that gold mining formula was basically years ago to assist marginal mining. I think we all realize that your price per bullion bar versus your cash cost of producing that bullion bar, any significant fluctuation, up or downward movements, can have an extreme volatility in your profitability. So the formula is mainly there to assist these companies. And effectively, when you are mining or running a marginal mine, it is in a sense to protect that company and keep it open, continuing business, and basically protecting the employment for the labor force and getting the company afloat for better times. So that's basically the history and the purpose of the formula.
Thanks. On to some of the other questions. On the question of how much more is there out there, that is an extremely difficult question to answer. Because if you think about it, there are a number of judgment calls you need to make in order to work out what is the correct price. In my example, I picked a very easy example where we had an easily determinable market value. Now, in the real world, that is sometimes not as easy. And so the question is, what are you benchmarking against? And that is hard to get. And that is why it's extremely difficult to make accurate estimates of what you're putting. It's also why in the transfer pricing space, things are generally not illegal, because it's quite easy to make a mistake or to have differing judgments in what I think is the accurate benchmark and what you think is the accurate benchmark. You may have legitimate reasons for coming to different answers. So in that space, you clearly wouldn't want to try and make something illegal because there is room for differences in opinion. Of course, you could have taxpayers who cross the Rubicon, to use an unfortunate analogy in a South African way, who just take it a little bit too far and essentially lie to us or suppress facts for us. And at the next phase, we start thinking about whether we're dealing with tax evasion as opposed to tax avoidance. Okay, so that is in the dividing line between the two. If you're actively lying to us or suppressing information that you should be giving us, then you start moving into the space of tax evasion and start thinking about criminal behavior. Members of the Standing Committee will recall that this year we brought an amendment to try and take away some legal justification people were using to give us directors, minutes, and other documents with 98% of the content back out on the grounds they didn't think it was relevant for SARS teams. They're depressing information, but they're trying to find a legal basis for doing so. And I think you'd be surprised to anybody to know that wasn't a transfer price environment where they particularly didn't want us to have the whole picture. That's wanted us to focus on particular aspects they desire. So we can't take that away. Do we have all the instruments? I think we have all the essential instruments. What we need to think about now are how do we tweak those instruments and how do we supplement them based on what the emerging international directions are. So we've got what we need to get the job done, but we now need to keep on sharpening those tools, and we need to add the extra tools that the world thinks is appropriate. That speaks to the question that was raised a little later about why does it take us so long to get to a template for reporting, which is country by country reporting and the efforts that are coming in there. Just remember, we have to get agreement from countries around the world that multinationals that were based in those countries would report in a particular format. So what we're looking for is a standard template that would apply whether your headquarters is in the United States, United Kingdom, South Africa, India, China, and you can go down the list. We would have a standard template of what information. You can imagine that getting agreements across such a variety of countries was a bit of a challenge. We have it now. We also have a review that has been sort of mandated for 2020 so that we'll look at what's currently in that template. And after we've had some experience of using that information, we'll then revisit the template and say, right, is there more that is needed? Is there information we're asking for that isn't needed? And basically update it and assure it's fit for purpose. Are we successful in retrieving the money? Yes, certainly, with respect to the tax. So it's something to bear in mind, if with the 20 billion we're talking about, that 20 billion is no longer in South Africa. That we can't get back. What we can get is the tax fund. And that's what we get. Right. So is it a deterrent? I believe it is. And that's why you would need an effective transfer pricing capacity in SARS, because if you do not have that, essentially you're saying to people who want to do this, that it's open season. You need to create a credible deterrent that, yes, if you do this, SARS will find you, and we will take action. With respect to a subsequent question of how far back can we go, generally speaking, 3 years, unless there's been a fraud, misrepresentation, or non-disclosure. If any of those are present, the people then support people to go back as far as we need to. But if you put your cards on the table and you disclose what you're supposed to, then you can go back 3 years and that's it. 5 years in certain circumstances, depending on how the tax is assessed. Interestingly enough, that is a question that we probably do need to consider, is whether in specific areas like transfer pricing, general anti-avoidance rule, have some other specific areas, whether we need a longer prescription period to go back. That's an open question at this point. But it's something some other countries have certainly thought about, and it's something we need to think about too. Is it more prevalent now? I'll leave that to the people who are dealing with it at the coal base to answer. Is it a distinct interest to investments? No, I don't think it is, because we're playing by the international rules. So whether you invest in South Africa or you invest somewhere else, you should be confronted with precisely the same kind of deterrence, the same kind of response. If you were doing something that was markedly different from the international rules, then that would be a question that you would have to ask. Is what you're offering significant enough that even though you are moving beyond the international rules, you are still somewhere you want to be? Some countries can answer that question, yes, other countries. It just depends on your market dynamics and what you have to offer. The question of the transfer pricing unit being divorced from debt. The reason we create a specific transfer pricing unit is because there are special set of skills that are needed, but they would clearly work together with the other parts of the large business center that would be dealing with, say, hybrid instruments or any of the other particular issues that would arise around base erosion profits. But I think we've demonstrated, transfer pricing is a significant issue on its own that needs specialists in that space to help structure. The question of services and businesses government, do they do this as well? Yes, they do. Do we go after them? Yes. There are some issues where you have players that come in for short periods of time and then you so by the time you find out that they haven't been playing the game that they should have, they have disappeared with their funds and they are beyond our reach. That is where provisions like the assistance and collections would come in. Of course, if they happen to be from a country where we do not have assistance and collections, well, then we have an issue. We then can't go further with that. Funds flows through the banks, are we monitoring that sort of thing? Yes, that's why, in fact, we have some of the withholding tax initiatives in the law that we do now. That is based on information that we got on particular kinds of payments from the Reserve Bank, so that we can monitor. We basically can see an emerging issue. and that's why we have those difficulties. Countries we can learn from with respect to the legislative measures that we sort of put on the table for the financial implications of operating transfer pricing, I think I'm going to hand over again to my colleagues at the Colfax. No, we certainly will, but we just want to answer them properly. obviously that would be the best person to also speak to questions around assessing the people involved and paying for the back, if I can put it that way, of having transfer pricing. Does it make financial sense for that? Interesting that you say that. The EE1 was some years ago. We went so together really hard. I'm putting transfer pricing for this one question. With respect to the question around, is there a trend of entities coming into South Africa being particularly aggressive? It really does depend on the specific entities. There are some that are tax aggressive and there's some that are not. So it's really a question of essentially the policy the board has decided for the group. And one success that we have had over the last decade, through interventions in the Forum on Tax Administration, which we didn't put up on there because we've got nothing particularly to do with transfer pricing, is to get the whole question of tax into the boardroom. Once upon a time, it used to be something that the tax director worried about, and the board only worried about it if the tax bill went up more than they expected it to. I think the focus that tax administrations and civil society have put on tax over the last decade has gotten to the point where boards now specifically think about tax as an issue of risk and that they need to take explicit decisions around. So some boards will take the explicit decision that yes, it is part of what we do that we will push the tax system to the limit. That's who we are and how we operate. And there are others that say that's not the space we want to be in. It creates reputational risks for the company. It creates risks for our shareholders because a large tax liability may materialize 5 years from now and all of a sudden, you know, there goes our dividend policy for the next couple of years because we're finding out to meet the tax bill that we have. So there are companies that can say, let's back off, we're not going to push quite as hard. But everybody does some pain, I think we're going to take for granted. It's just how aggressive the planning is. I think we touched on the question of legality and the legislative measures. On the question of who we can learn from around the legislative measures, this is precisely why we do the kind of benchmarking that we do. Fortunately, because we have these international initiatives around transfer pricing, some of that work is done for us because that benchmarking is happening as part of the process. So we're able to learn from that without having to try to do it ourselves alone. But there are a number of countries with well-developed transfer pricing that we certainly look at. That's why we're working at the question of documentation. When we swapped out the idea of separate documentation rules was not really international practice. It is something that has become more and more common over the years. So it's something we need to think about here. Is it necessary and how do we strike the right balance? Why would some of the island states cooperate was a question that was raised. That's a very good question. The answer to that is because all of the initiatives that you're looking at globally at the moment try to do two things. They try to have a primary rule, so that's the rule that everybody pays by the book, and then they have a secondary rule that kicks in the other side. So there's, alternatively, there's something that's known as a defensive measure that may be taken. And internationally, one of your primary defensive measures is something called control of foreign company rule, because it helps sweep up some of what's happening. And again, that's why it's one of the issues that is part of the BEPS project. How do you make sure that the control of foreign company rules are effective and work in this context? So we're well aware of the fact that some countries would probably not be that willing to cooperate, and so there are steps taken as part of the project to what happens then. What is the fallback position if that happens? So you may well cooperate, because if you don't, the fallback position is clear, then it may in fact be less pleasant than the initial position. I've answered the question on going back, I think. The question of why were we so advanced with respect to VAT and electronic services, I think it's precisely because of that question. We are a consumer rather than a producer. So we need to think about that question hard, fast. Whereas if you're a large economy where you're more imbalanced, well, it's an important issue and one that you need to think about, but it's one that you can put on not the back burner, you have to put on the front burner. We're not in that, we don't have the luxury of being in that space. So we need to move. It's not at the front, because we're not the leading edge, but we're part of the leading groups of countries working there. There was a very valuable point that made that whatever we do needs to be justified in course of the future. And again, that's one of the reasons why these things do take a bit longer. Because we're very mindful of the fact that we're either going to have to justify this in court someday, or we're going to have to justify it in what are known as competent authority proceedings with another country, where we discuss why an adjustment should or shouldn't be made. So whatever we do, it does need to be based on a very firm foundation, and that's why we need to come to this. Denise, I think I'm going to hand over to you with some of those direct at the call questions.
Thank you, sir. I think before going to responding to some of the questions, I think it's interesting to draw the distinction between transfer pricing, base devotion, and profit shipping. I think if one looks at a particular country's tax base, as that base gets eroded through profit shifting from one country to the next, and the concern with the BEPS project is artificial movement of profits from a high-tax jurisdiction to a low-tax jurisdiction. So if you're looking at base erosion, it's talking about a sovereign tax base, and if you look at it also, there's been a challenge because the worldwide base has also been eroded with the proliferation of microstates and tax havens as well. Transfer pricing is one of the mechanisms. So when we talk profit shifting, transfer pricing is often number one on the list, but there are other methods like excessive interest charges, deliberate creation of hybrids, treaty abuse, etc. So if we look at this whole concept, now somebody of interesting mentioned, well, why should we even be looking at it? It's so prevalent, it's so pervasive. But the reality is, I think it's more than just the tax issue, and as a lot of the honorable speakers have mentioned, this is a societal issue. So if you have less and less in a country because the base is being eroded, and more monies are going offshore to favorable tax jurisdictions, and in some cases we're not paying any tax, it raises a problem in terms of service provision in your own country, because then you have to provide services that really don't get the tax from. It's the taxes are going to come from the people that are so-called captive markets, and all your captive taxpayers that aren't as mobile. So it's imperative that this issue is dealt with, but also dealt with in such a way that the integrity of the tax system is also preserved. So, I mean, if I'm a business and I see another business not paying tax, it's a problem, because it makes the level, it makes the playing field unfair. So one has to level that playing field. But equally, as you will see a lot of activism worldwide, there's an outcry by the individual taxpayer to say, how is it that a company can come into our country, utilize the resources of our country, make profits from this country, and not want to pay taxes in this country? So that's where the moral and societal issue comes in. From a tax point of view, I think it's important to note that we're dealing with the whole issue and the reason of international taxation. And when we talk international taxation, it's less hard law and more soft law, meaning that you have, like, what's the convention, the transfer pricing guidelines by the OECD, or you have the UN Model Tax Convention, etc. These represent codes of good practice and give guidance. So it's important in the area of international tax that one has to follow these codes of good practice and guidance. So if one is looking specifically at transfer pricing, look at your transfer pricing guidelines. And transfer pricing guidelines, essentially, by the OECD says that you have to determine what is that arm's length tribes, and that Unprepared Tribes is obviously two independent parties contracting, because at translation there will be their tension, so you get the right tribe. Now the problem is obviously with our financial company, where you have entities within a particular group that physically transact with each other. If more than 60% of world trade is within groups, intra-trade, it raises a problem. If I look at SARS and the South African tax base, the multinationals are registered at large business centers. More than 74% of our tax base are multinationals. So the potential for transfer planning is significant. But as has been correctly mentioned, it doesn't mean there's necessarily a problem. The problem arises when you bring unacceptable transfer pricing, meaning that it is distortion and your price is far off from what would be considered the arm's length price. Now, because the potential exists across the entire region, so it's not unique to mining or manufacturing. It's across all. It would be telecoms, it would be about every single sector. Financial services, etc. In terms of quantification, I think we have a problem globally. When Trump mentioned the best action items, he was in action item number 11. And this action item number is precisely because we cannot quantify. Right now, if you pick up any literature on base erosion, profit shifting, transfer pricing, a lot of it is individual research. There isn't thorough coordinated research on the problem. So even if we're talking transfer pricing, we might be talking anecdotally about particular situations we've dealt with. It seems that the amount is not that significant. Because if you raise your assessment of the billions of rand, clearly there's a lot of money involved. But that is a worldwide problem. So part of the action 11 is to quantify what is the extent of the abuse and base in terms of base erosion and profit shifting. Somebody mentioned also former President Mbeki's initiative on illicit flows. We are also part of that illicit flows. The transfer pricing is not illegal. The illicit flows is most centered on a lot of corruption that is taking place in Africa, and I know that the point today is more than Africa loses more than a year. I think it's actually around a year in terms of some of these illicit flows. Coming back to the issue of transfer pricing, so I think it's only fair to be a little bit cautious around the kinds of numbers that we see. The truth of the matter is, how do you know how much money is being lost? We can't. Until you actually do an audit, you don't know how much is being lost. But I can tell you from a large business point of view, if I take my 10 most significant cases that we are dealing with, each of those cases involves base erosion. Not only transfer pricing, other issues and forms of base erosion. So the amounts are significant. You also raised questions around value add and yield. From a large business point of view, we utilize less than 0.1% of the revenue we bring in terms of the cost utilized. If I look at the audit yield, our audit yield on average is about 67 million per case. If you look at results rate, this year we've had more than a 10% increase over results of the previous year, and already to date we've raised in excess of 10 billion rand in results. Thus, quite like you mentioned, in terms of collection, once we've agreed an assessment, it would then go through the process as well. So we would engage companies around a little of a finding stage and talk to them about the assessment. And usually there's a preference to try and resolve the issue. Our process and our transfer pricing approach particularly is very robust. That's why it takes us 18 months. But it will involve up to sometimes 50 to 100 interviews with people from a business point of view, because the aim of the transfer pricing audit, we utilize economists, lawyers, accountants, is to understand what has happened in this business. And an important concept is what is value creation. So we're interested to make sure that from a business point of view, your activities isn't necessarily linked with value. Or have you just put in a company in a particular jurisdiction that adds no value but aims to shift profits there and take money out by charging some fees of some sort? So we look at minutes. We engage in interviews. We also do a lot of field work. What we have noted, though, is we try to shorten our transfer pricing audit time to make sure that it is more efficient. If one has to except that we are disrupting business, and talking about large corporate business being disrupted. So generally when we do a field visit, the max they will take is a few weeks, but we try to limit that field visit and the scope of that order which will be discussing with that multinational report. So by the time we actually finish our orders to process, that process is very robust. Now, we are watching in the South African environment is that we can enter into a settlement mode. As Frank quite rightly pointed out, it's less factual because remember, at arm's length, you would have a range. And also from an administration point of view, you need to know absolutely what has happened in a company, which is almost impossible because sometimes you don't get the full information. So it behooves us to then actually decide on what's an acceptable amount that needs to be paid and to make sure that that's a sufficient deterrent as well for this kind of behavior, but also going forward, we want to make sure that the practices make sense. So that's part of the really strict governance process. So even the large business where the audit is conducted, when it has to go into a settlement mode, it has to go to a lot of governance committees across SARS. So that ensures that the right thing is done and ensures that the amount is settled there. As the correct value. In terms of the staff protection of the public.
Co-chair is a preview, I'm not. This venue has to be the case as one of the chief of business. In finance, you know, we finish at one and then it's really required. So it is a sense in which you can communicate the main point in the next feature for us, because what's crucial is that we have to decide how we go forward. Actually, I find your English very stimulating. I'm not sure why your colleagues overshadows you and seem to be enough space. But that's a fine given here after 1 o'clock. Just by the chief of the office here.
Sure. Thank you. I will try. Definitely try to finish before 1. Thank you. Okay. In terms of protection of our staff, we take a slightly different approach. And I think the question raised by Honorable Speaker is very valid. Because as soon as you start dealing with billions of rands in a business, and yes, don't ask any easy question. But one of the things that we try to approach in our audit process is not linked to one person. So we go there as a team. We also engage the company in terms of looking at things, so we will talk about the scope, etc. Wherever they encounter a challenge, we will then escalate. So there will be times where, for example, myself and the head of the legal section will sit down with the taxpayer and say, we expect a bit more cooperation in this particular area. But secondly, because no single person can veto an issue, decide who to audit, how to audit, whether that assessment can get off the table, I think the rights are much more protected. Whenever we have found threats, which hasn't been offered, I think the challenges we face is around provision of information more than anything else. I think because we're not dealing outright with legal stuff. At the end of the day, when a company feels if they start with information, in all likelihood, we're not going to have a very good assessment or get close to that. So that's why our approach has to be very robust. Also, I think we have to be very persistent, which helps us in making sure that we have a good result, the right kind of result. I'm going to quickly be brief in following some of the other areas. In terms of legality or illegality, again, it comes back to the issue of soft law and having that range. I think it's difficult to make it outright illegal. I think you can make it illegal if it's called devoicing, and as a consequence, pricing hasn't been right. In terms of goals of the team, SARS has published a compliance plan. The first item of the compliance plan that SARS is committed to is transfer pricing, addressing transfer pricing. So when we report to Parliament in terms of outputs that must be achieved, we get this transparency on that as well. Specifically, in terms of disincentivizing behavior, I think almost a week ago, there was an article in the Law Review. They were talking about our approach to transfer pricing and hinting that perhaps we're going too far because I think they're providing a disincentive because it's making a lot of practitioners worried because we're very robust. In fact, often, by the time we get to the point of different findings and having that discussion, very difficult for any taxpayer to walk away. We tend to go immediately into a settlement discussion because they know our case is pretty robust. Thank you. Interestingly enough, India has less than a 10% success rate on transfer pricing. All our cases that we take hold from the risk point of view has a result, and it just has a material result. In terms of what's the risk for them, and because I sit on zero, I think it's important to raise and equal a certain dynamic. And in fact, one of the countries, one of the developed countries, raised the issue is what, why must they sit there and give their rate away? And the main reason why they need to sit at the table is because even in your countries that have a lot of multinationals, their multinationals are not really only doing business in their country, their multinationals have a global footprint. And they have an interest in the developing world.
Somebody's getting ready to say, we gave you 3 minutes, you've taken 4.5. The thing is, after you want to manage the time more effectively, I know a lot of questions, you should organize them automatically in your answer. Can you simplify, you give a little of an answer so about security, about value for money, but she's restless. What precisely is your question, quickly?
Sure.
Can we have a 50 stop reply? Yes?
Sure. It's on settlement. Many companies actually budget for settlement. And you might find that it doesn't achieve the necessary intention if they budget for it. Also, LAN wanted to tell me, in one way, what has Mashako was done in this context?
Confidentiality, I cannot talk about any context.
No, but about companies having a settlement provision, let's talk about
that. In terms of companies having a settlement, companies, it's normal for them to try if they think they do.
Right.
We often look at it on their financial see if there's a risk, but not necessarily obvious.
Quickly, 30 seconds.
I'll need this when I check. Just with respect to settlements, what you'll often find is with the ones we're talking about here, these are grants that companies have not provided for. So if you're interested in seeing how effectively things, just look at the tax notes and the published financial statements, you'll often see that SARD is mentioned as a surprise credit.
All right, then maybe I'll turn these people, if you pick them up, can you put them in writing, send to the two chairs who would like to look at it and the rest, and then we'll send it to them, right? Yeah.
So basically, Congressi, I can't think of anything. I'm throwing it over to you, and then maybe have a quick response on the way forward. You may have ideas that you can take forward. Thank you.
Yeah. everything out of the base because the PAC is chairing, right? So I can't get away from the PAC for that. And he said, point of interruption. So the chairperson is PAC. He says, all I'm doing is a point of interruption. So he says, what's your point of interruption? So throughout the body, all you have to do is go to discuss the PAC. Point of interruption. So the guy will ask. And I can't even imagine the PAC, the ANC, detail was not there. Work and action, whatever they were called. Understand, because every time you got this last one, you always think about point of interaction. Then afternoon, you meet the wallet, I think, for the end. So she comes in, she wants to say in the morning. After about 15 minutes, the guy